Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod, this week brought to you by Jack's doing his dissertation and Mel lives in the middle of America. Those are the two guests joining me and Jamie, or Jamie and I, this week. Soon to be joined by Matthew Wandless from London as well. But Mel is here from Kansas, a little town called Emporia, in the middle of America, literally in the middle. Google it. And Jack joins us from Leeds University, where he's just started writing his dissertation. Good evening, both of you.
Good evening.
Hello. Jamie is here as well, as usual. How are you, Jamie? How's the life of a child-bearing parent?
He's good. He's very fat these days. He's massive yeah. Fat baby.
Great. That's how
and
old
he does.
You're doing it right then.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's all going in, and he's doing some huge stinky shits. And you know, honestly, the farts. He does farts that smell like my dad's farts. It's very weird.
Keep
I told my dad that,
family.
And my dad was so proud. My dad was like, "Oh, that's a lovely thing to say."
He started crying. Welcome to the podcast. We're talking about Lemony Snicket tonight. Talking about dysfunctional, weird families. Lemony Snicket, which of course was a series of books written by the executive producer of this series. 5 points to anyone who remembers his name.
Something Handler, right? David Handler?
Yeah.
Daniel?
As usual.
And actually the name of the series is A Series of Unfortunate Events, written by Lemony Snicket.
That's right.
Who is really
him.
Ian Handler? Is that right?
Damn,
I just heard an interview with him.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Normally at this point, Jamie's Googled it. Have you Googled it?
Googling.
Great.
Googling right now.
Anyway, we all know the film that has been made.
Daniel Handler.
There we go.
I got it.
Well done.
Good work, Mel.
And it's, you know, the movie was starring Jim Carrey, which we've all probably seen. Has everyone watched the film?
Awful.
Yep. Oh.
Absolutely awful.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as saying awful, but... You know, I think, well, we'll compare them shortly, but that film is obviously an hour and a half of the stories compressed. The TV series is more of the stories stretched out over an entire series, obviously, which gives it a bit more of a canvas to play with. And also, I think it leads itself to a more colourful or a deeper playing of the main part, Count Olaf, as well. Which we'll come on to. Let's welcome from London, Matthew Wandless.
Hello, everyone.
Just want to quickly say, Matt Wandless told me off for calling him to get his attention for this podcast and disturbing his bedtime with his child. This is correct, yeah. Matt?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't tell you off. I just asked you not to do it.
You know what? I've got a child now, so I can completely empathise with Matthew.
And this is where
if you get a child to go to sleep, it's like gold dust. It's like witchcraft. And if someone rings up in the middle of witchcraft, you might as well forget it.
Mel will already know this, but Jack, you're going to learn this over the next few years or so. When friends have babies, you see very quickly that the world revolves around them. Oh my God. Goodness.
No, that's where you're wrong.
Can I just ask?
The world revolves around the child. The child becomes a dictator and we are his servants. And if we disobey his orders, we pay a heavy price, Howell.
That's your problem.
This is true.
In your house.
True.
If Matthew Wandless can't control his mobile phone, that's not my fault. What am I, psychic? Jeez. What's the guy got to do? Can't even ring Matt. What if Domino's Pizza wants to ring you and sell you a pizza, Matt? Are you going to tell them off as well?
Yes.
All right,
yes,
fair enough.
I would, yeah.
How dare you?
Me and Domino's are on very good terms, so.
Well, I apologise for any time that I've scarred your family life in some way. And
this is annoying, because I've got different problems to Jamie, because for me it's not like it's going to wake her up, but she just knows that the phone is ringing, and she's like, is that Mummy? No, it's not. It's freaking Howell Evans.
Howell, it's pronounced. It's pronounced Howell. I would have thought by now you could pronounce my name.
You still spell his name with two T's, so.
That's true. All right. Lemony Snicket, how much have we all watched? Jack Boardman.
I've seen all of it. Read all the books, watched the film, and now all the series.
Bought the T-shirt. Mel, how much?
Three episodes, a couple of the books, and the film.
Jamie?
One episode and the film.
Okay, Matt?
Zero books, zero films, and an episode and a bit.
Okay, I've watched the full series, not read the books. So, what do we think so far? The point of this podcast, if you've never heard it before, is to let you know whether you should spend some time watching a TV series or not. Jack, should people... I'm just asking you straight out because I know the answer. Should people watch Lemony Snicket?
Yes, definitely. Well, I always found that Lemony Snicket, for me, that was my version of Harry Potter. When all my friends were going crazy about Harry Potter, I was always into the Lemony Snicket books. And the film, I can't remember how old I was when it came out, but it was a major letdown. I didn't like the way they did it. Even at the time when I didn't really know much about acting or anything and have much of an appreciation for it, I knew that it wasn't a very good role for... It's Jim Carrey, isn't it, who plays... kind of. Yeah, I didn't like it. So
why?
For me, when I saw the... I don't know. For me, he didn't portray Count Olaf the way I saw him to be. And even Klaus and Violet, to an extent as well, I didn't think they were the way I'd imagined them from the books. But then that's why when the series came along, for me, it no longer had to live up to the book standard. It just had to live up and
just to beat
exceed
that.
Exceed what the movie had given us. And I think it definitely does, even though I still do find myself... the baby in it, Sonny, still freaks the hell out of me.
Yeah. It's still difficult. It's always difficult to see something that you've read, but how does it compare with your imagined version of Count Olaf? How does that compare with Neil Patrick Harris's playing of him?
I think he pulls it off really well. And not only that, the entire world that they're in and the extremities of it, the reptile house, like that was, I really enjoyed all of that. And the character who played, is it their uncle?
Yeah.
He was brilliant. And that's the way I imagined it to be, not the way that the film had portrayed it.
Is there anything missing from Neil Patrick Harris's performance from your imagination, though?
It has been a very long time since I read the books, but not particularly, no.
Good.
I think he's done a really bang-on job.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
There's quite a bit missing from the other characters, though.
Yeah. So let's get some first-time opinions. Matt, what do you make one episode in?
Why
don't we have a synopsis for anyone who doesn't know the story?
Yeah, go on,
Jamie. Do the first episode? What happens in the first episode?
Okay, so the first episode is immediately framed by the introduction. It is the chap with the very lovely deep voice. Is he Lemony Snicket?
Yes.
Yes, he is. Sorry, I wasn't entirely clear on that. But so he introduces the story as this this terrible tragedy that sort of a terrible, unrelenting tragedy that unfolds about these two children, and then three. Of course, there's baby. I always forget about babies. then you start to see it unfold. They are part of a very sort of strange and eccentric and precocious family, tragedy visits them, and they are orphaned and sent to live with the awful Count Olaf in great hardship.
Yeah.
And it's very stylized. And what I was about to say before Jamie so rudely interrupted me was to make a very valid point, was that it felt like watching a TV version of a Wes Anderson film. Mm. It felt like... Yeah. Because I watched, I caught a bit of the Grand Budapest Hotel. I've seen it before, but it was on the other night, and I just stopped and watched about an hour of it. Mm. And it really feels it feels very much like that, especially with the kind of looks to camera and the sort of strange, almost monotonal way that people play themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really feels like it's borrowed a lot from those movies, which I'm a big fan of. So I was kind of okay with that, but I was very unsure of it for most of the first episode, but I think it's very interesting what it's doing, and I've never seen anything like it in television. I'm fairly sure I can say that. And then when it started to introduce song as well, I started to get really into it.
Yeah.
And I want to carry on. So
good. Well, job done. Good night.
Yeah.
Jamie, what do you think one episode in?
Okay, well, first of all, it's important for you to know that I liked the film.
Okay.
And I thought Jim Carrey as Count Olaf was bloody brilliant. And I love Jim Carrey. I know, I can hear you scoffing. I can hear you scoffing away. Actually really enjoyed the film. I had read the book, so I didn't know what to expect. And when I watched the film, I found it very interesting and refreshing.
TV. Tell us about the TV.
So, Neil Patrick Harris as Count Olaf is, for me, a massive downgrade.
Whoa!
It's like going from the best comedic performer of his generation to Doogie Howser, which is exactly who he is. It's Doogie Howser. And it's very much, I just find him like doing a mediocre impression of Jim Carrey doing Count Olaf. I know that's the character,
God.
And I'm sure I'll get used to him, but I genuinely just thought Jim Carrey did this better. Jim Carrey was funnier than that. Jim Carrey would have done that song better than that. And that was the hard bit for me to get past, is that why do I want to watch a show of someone doing a slightly lesser version of the film? I know I'm in the minority right now, but I like the film, damn it.
That may have been hard for you to get past. The next difficult thing that it's going to be that you're going to have to get past is the fact that you and I very rarely disagree on things, and when we do, I tend to then bully you until you have some form of tantrum, and you could not be more wrong in this opinion. Before we get into that, which we will, Jack, don't worry, just bite your tongue. Mel, 3 episodes in, so you're obviously enjoying it. You're almost at the obligatory 4.
I don't know that I enjoy it. That's why I stopped at episode 3. I'm not connecting. I've been thinking about this since we decided we were going to talk about it. And I think my problem is with the narrator.
Right.
That it's keeping too much distance between me and what's actually happening.
Right.
I think the narrator is putting up this barrier. And I that was my problem with the books, too, I think. Not just the relentless, depressing awfulness of what's happening to these children.
Mm.
Which is wearing and exhausting. But I think that, you know, in the books, the narrator kind of works because it's a book.
Mm-hmm.
And someone has to be a narrator.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little less obvious. But I like Patrick Warburton.
Yeah.
But, gosh, I'm not connecting with the story or the characters. And I think that's the problem is the conclusion.
Okay, so the state of play right now is this. Matthew Wanless is carrying on, but with caveats. Jack is in love with it. Jamie is an idiot, and Mel needs some persuasion. So let's see what we can do. First of all, Mel, I think I was slightly irritated by him at first as well. I felt like it created sort of stop downs to the pace. But it becomes better and better. The more you kind of get the joke, if you like, the better it becomes. Whose cat is it?
I'm sorry about
it?
My cat. It's mine.
I was listening to last week's podcast and it appeared a lot.
She was all over the place last week. It's fine. Yeah. She was going crazy.
It's quite nice. Sorry. It's quite nice.
She's very beautiful.
So I think trust that will become less annoying as you get deeper into the story and you care a little bit more.
Did you, like me, Mel, just keep thinking, oh, I wish it was Alec Baldwin?
Oh, no, that would have been good, though, wouldn't it?
Much better.
I kept wishing it was Don Draper.
It was Matt who was...
John Hamm. Either of them would have been fine, yeah.
Talking about the sort of monotone Wes Anderson style of it. Was that you, Matt?
Yeah.
Which is also... I like Wes Anderson, but in... 90-minute or 100-minute doses.
Yeah.
And here you've got it on and on and on. And at a point, it just becomes too precious for me.
Well, I think my only thing against the Wes Anderson point is that I think Wes Anderson's style is so tightly directed to the point that people move in the way that he's told them to. It's so symmetrical. It's so... it's very much Wes Anderson world. I think this world is a lot more fluid. It's a lot more. It's a warmer perhaps at times, but yes, at the beginning, for the first couple of episodes, I think maybe the style is. Well, that's why we have the 4-episode rule, because the style always puts you off. The narrator gets. I forgot that I wanted John Hamm, and by the end, I decided that I was really happy that it was him playing the narrator. So if that's a if there's a parallel there. The Jamie's point about Jim Carrey, I think, is absolutely ludicrous. And this is why. Because Jim Carrey, in a 1.5-hour version of this story, you can afford to... and by the way, Jamie, I understand why you think it at this point. I think that's fine. But I think by the end of the series, you'll have a completely different opinion. And the reason is that in a 1.5-hour telling of this story, Jim Carrey's playing of him was purely psychopathic. He played it as a psychopath. And it was in a film of that length, it needs to be that black and white. He was insane. He was over the top. He was everything that Jim Carrey does really well. Neil Patrick Harris is not doing an impression of Jim Carrey. I'm 100% sure that he is not. I'm sure he's got involved with this because he understands the character more. See if this chimes with you, Jack. That character is supposed to be like Matthew Wandless. He's supposed to be an amateur dramatics person who who hasn't been given the stage that they so well deserve. And so this is a story... Forget it, Matt. I'll take that back. This is a story about... What if an incredibly self-centered thespian was a killer, right? They wanted stuff so much that they were a killer. And the methods...
Done a massive spoiler for us there?
No. Okay. No, I'm comparing it to Psychopath. But right. The lengths to it that he will go to achieve what he wants are... endless, but it's born of all of the tools he uses to get there are to do with being a thespian. So, for example, if the Jim Carrey character, say the Jim Carrey character got caught, say they were standing round in a room and he was wearing a disguise, for example, and it was proven that he was actually Count Olaf. Now, the Jim Carrey character at that point is so insane that he would probably just go, yes, you got me, and stab everyone in the room. This guy, at that point, would go, huh, and run away because his disguise is everything that he's got. He might behave in psychopathic ways, but he's actually driven by the idea that he can fool people with his excellent skills and his excellent power. And it's that depth of character, it's that kind of... nuance to this, which makes him as a villain so different and just so rich, so colourful. In the more episodes you see, the more you will see Count Olaf employing his skills of disguise and his team around him employing theatrical skills to try and achieve what they want, to the point that they perhaps make life more difficult for themselves. So you get a much more three-dimensional opportunity.
Yeah, and I will give you this. There was one moment in the first episode that rang, like, that I really, like, struck a chord, and it was kind of a brutal moment in a way. It's the moment where he hits the boy when they're having dinner.
And that was a moment.
Yeah, and that was like, okay, that's a bit deep. Like, because up until then, and the way Jim Carrey portrayed it in Lois was kind of a bit of a comical, you know, an idiot comical guy who's got macabre designs on these children, but at the same time is a little bit buffoonish. But that was the one moment where, and he hits him, and even the people, these with the cast members from his acting troupe, gasped it as well. You can see that there might be a different level and a bit more of a darkness and less sympathetic angle to him as well.
Yeah,
that I can.
And that's why. Why would he slap a child? Because it's the depth of his selfishness. Nothing matters other than his own. So I suppose I'm arguing that he is the psychopath. But what I'm saying is Jim Carrey's performance was so broad that it was kind of general psychopathic sort of guy. Whereas this guy is, I will achieve this and everybody will serve me. But the only tools he's got are the tools of theatre, which is, you know, just as a premise...
Don't underestimate the tools of theatre.
I know. But as a premise, that's what I think, you know, in that very first scene when you see the kids for the first time who have been orphaned, it was going to be something... I wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy it. And then the more that you see that you love the evil of this character, the more it goes on, it's deliciously evil that you want to see what he's going to try next, even though you want him to lose. You know, you kind of want him to win.
I agree, but I do have to say that I found, as it went on, he became slightly annoying for me, and even the story, the way it was portrayed at the mill, the last two episodes.
Don't give away anything, Jack.
For me, they weren't as good as the first couple of episodes. I think the first four or so, I thought they were absolutely amazing. Whereas the last four, it almost went downhill for me a little bit. I still enjoyed Count Olaf. I still thought he was good. It was more the children that started to annoy me, and Mr. Poe really, really started. And the ending of it as well, the final scene of the last episode, I had to switch it off because it was just grating on me, Mr. Poe. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Poe is, but Mr. Poe is the guy who's a complete idiot, and he's the guy
ridiculous.
Representing the social services, I suppose. Although it's a bank, he's kind of the guy who's putting the children in different places. And this almost takes us back to the Stranger Things debate of, do you, like the Winona Ryder Matt debate? It's like, aren't you supposed to hate Mr. Poe? That actor, I think, is phenomenal, because when he has moments where he goes from being that idiot to, like, getting carried away, eating some food that he shouldn't be eating, or something, and you see a different side to him. I know what you mean about the last few episodes, but it's still like a 5-star series for me, 5 out of 5. Even if I think really the guy who plays Monty in the third episode is so good, that world is so good,
phenomenal,
that it's difficult to follow.
Definitely.
But it's the whole thing. Like, if they released two more series tomorrow, I would have watched both series by Sunday. I love it.
Can I ask a mildly spoilery question?
Yes.
The only part that really kept me going was what actually happened with the parents.
Yeah.
So my question is does that get resolved?
That remains present, but I feel like they're playing a very long game here.
And to an extent, it's revealed a bit more. You understand a bit more of it at the end, but it's not fully exposed as to who, well, not necessarily who they are, but that entire story. It's given a little bit more away, but not enough to fully understand it.
There's also a really interesting, quite disappointing twist in their story. And at the very end of the series, one of the very last shots, you see it sort of coming together again and going, oh, what's going on? It's very intriguing and it's very smart. And I don't think... And that style, the steampunk gothic sort of style that it's got, I think is just, like Matt said, I can't... You feel like you can compare it to other things in your head, but there's nothing quite like it. And if you stick with it, I think it has that feel of picking up a children's book, which is quite difficult to achieve, I think, with TV. It has that closeness of like, oh, I want to see what the evil swine is doing this week kind of thing. You know?
It's a bit like the old serials.
Yeah.
You know, that they would show it when they would have, you know, two features in a Western or something like that, a serial.
Yeah.
At the theatres.
I got to say, you're not convincing me to carry on. I mean, Jack's lost interest by the end, and Mel is three episodes in and given up, and only Howell's gone through with the whole series. It doesn't sound like... I mean, one out of three ain't good.
Jack loves it. Jack's just annoyed because it ended with a song. That's why Jack's annoyed.
I would definitely say it's worth watching. I just think it peaked at episodes 3 and 4 for me, and it didn't necessarily go downhill. It just never reached that standard again for me.
Episode 3 and 4 are really, really great, but it's unfair to we shouldn't focus on that. They just happen to be really great episodes of TV. Mm-hmm. They're really good.
Yeah.
Remember that Jack doesn't get the Muppets, okay? So now... Of course, anything that's an ending...
That's going to haunt you forever, Jack.
Yeah.
I know, it is, isn't it?
An ending that's particularly magical, maybe involves some music, maybe some singing, that kind of thing, Jack might be disappointed with, all right? Jack's in it for the books, and that's why he's stuck with it. It's one of the most unique series, and for me, the reason to carry on with it is this. We've talked a lot about commissioning and about the... You know, the Netflix's ability to fund really creative stuff. Neil Patrick Harris, for me, is the reason to carry on with this, Jamie, because he plays it. You could never write down what is so great about his performance. A commissioner could not have it described to them. It's got such a magic... It's got such an inventive... There's so much that he does which is off-script, reactions and stuff. There's so much life that he brings to it that it carries you through in the same way that only a truly unique stand-up comic or, you know, Chaplin or somebody who's got that real...
Have you really just compared Neil Patrick Harris, can we walk that back
a little bit there?
I have.
God.
Well, I would even say that, you know, Chaplin was incredibly rehearsed,
was,
you know.
Okay, he, you know, he was all right, Chaplin.
Well, I love Chaplin. He's one of my favourite things of all time, but he also...
But Neil Patrick Harris is better.
No. What I'm saying is, when somebody is being inventive in performance, Chaplin wasn't inventive in performance. He planned and structured and rehearsed and did scenes 300 times over. What I'm talking
about... Which is cheating.
No. What I'm talking about is just that joy of seeing somebody do something akin to improvising on screen, that you rarely see it now.
You're making me like it less, Howell.
That's why it's got... I'm saying that is the reason it's got 5 stars, amongst many other things.
That kind of silliness that you just came out with, that's making me like it less.
Why?
Because you've gone too far.
What are you talking about?
Bring it back, Jack.
Because I watch the musical scenes, and they're not that good. It's nice to see it in a TV show, but they're not that... The performers aren't that skilled.
I'm not talking about singing. I wasn't talking about singing.
I'm just talking about it in general. The sort of physicality of the actors. It's not spectacular, I didn't think, so far.
No, but I'm saying it is. So
I'm disagreeing with you.
Well, no, there you go. That's his argument.
I'm saying further down the line, if you stick to this thing, what we're watching is something that doesn't happen very often, which I'm trying to think. Who can you compare it to? Who is a performer that...
Chaplin.
No.
Keaton.
No, I'm not particularly talking about
Les
physicality.
Dennis.
Shut up. You right, name someone, Jamie. Name someone who clearly is like, you get the feeling that if you were on set, you would be pissing your pants.
Jim Carrey?
Jim Carrey.
yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they should get Jim Carrey to play him.
No,
yeah,
because
that would have been a good idea. That would have been good casting.
I think his take on it would be quite different and a bit more two-dimensional. But yes, he's inventive, right? Jim Carrey is inventive in the same way every time. Neil Patrick Harris is inventive from the point of view of the character of a thespian overdoing his role. And you just don't see it enough. And when you do see it, it's delicious is the word. I think it's true. I think this is a truly unique performance, which is, you know, just so insulting to the man to go, he's just Doogie Howser.
That's not what any of us have said. What I was saying is that you're reaming off of superlatives is just making me think that you that this is another case where I just don't agree with you about it in terms of quality, because it's good what he's doing. I didn't like it at first, but I started to like it a bit more. Mm-hmm. But it's not like transcendent, wonderful, miraculous performance.
I didn't use any of those words. I said that rarely now do you see an actor who is really improvising and is really bringing a character to role with a sort of energy and an inventiveness. You get the feeling that every take would be the same. In this case, it's not. And I think that what you'll see is that I'm not talking spurious shit. I'm talking about something that we don't see very often, and it's just great. And the reason is that it can't be explained. I'm the guy trying to pitch this to you, Matt, the commissioning editor or whatever. It's like this guy just has it. He has the thing that this character needs on stage. You know, he plays the role better than I can imagine. I cannot imagine anybody playing this role as well as that. Can you, Jack? Do you know what? Do you understand what I'm saying at all, Jack?
No, I understand where you're coming from, yeah, and I do think as well. I do think as well that I was thinking that you would struggle to find somebody else that brings that level of I can't even think of what the word
playfulness
you'd use to, yeah, the playful element to his character. But saying that, one of my favourite scenes of him was when there's a scene in a cinema at some point along the show, and Neil Patrick Harris looks at the screen and says to you, why would you go to the cinema when you can watch something from the comfort of your own home as and when you choose to watch it? And just that moment with the camera, I really,
yes,
that for me was one of the best scenes in the entire series. I thought it was great. And just throughout, there's little moments like that that really just make it worth watching.
It's that delivery of evil that people who really enjoy playing evil can really enjoy it and be inventive with it. You just don't see it enough. I know who it reminds me of. You're going to laugh. Has anybody seen any substantial amount of SpongeBob SquarePants?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's a shame. There's the evil character. Have you seen the evil character in SpongeBob? He's got a voice like this. He's like, what's his name? Plankton. Plankton, his name is. And he's okay. The guy who does the voice
for
that.
What's happening? What's happening?
The guy who does the voice for Plankton is a similar kind of performer who can really get a theatrical performance on screen or into a microphone to the point that it's like nobody could have expected the script to have been read or done quite in that way. And we don't see that very often. I can't think of another series we've talked about where somebody is, you know, just blowing it off the screen. Even Benedict Cumberbatch, isn't he great as Sherlock? But, yeah, if they announced someone else was playing him, yeah, fair enough, you know. It's just not often that we see that it's almost like they've written the part for themselves. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, now I feel like I do need to keep watching because I've got to see how
yeah, I am going to stick with it now. I am going to stick with it.
But are you both going to stick with it because you want to prove Hal all wrong a bit?
Isn't that why we all do this?
Because I feel like that now. I feel like I've had it oversold to me to the point where now I want to not like it.
Well, what can I do? I mean, we were underselling it a minute ago.
Well, I didn't say you. I never said you were underselling it. I never said that at any point. It's gone too far.
Let me use one more example.
That scene that Jack mentioned, though, in the cinema, that's in episode 3. I've seen that scene, and it is very good.
It's great, isn't it?
I had forgotten about that. Because that's when he's actually pretending to be somebody else anyway.
Yeah. I'm just to make it clear, I'm not talking about a performance which is like, I mean, first of all, he will win awards for that performance. Guaranteed that guy's winning Emmys for that performance, right? So there I will be proved right. Let's just wait and see. We'll see if we remember this conversation.
Got it here first.
But even, Matt, surely you can think of a can you think of a performance where you go, nobody could have played that part other than that well, other than that person?
Top of my head, maybe Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm.
Lauren Graham is Lorelai
Gilmore. Yeah, great example.
I'm sure I can think of something better than that.
Yeah, particularly in the sort of dramatic.
The
guy in The Artist.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, but it's more when you see somebody on screen who is like straight off stage, who's doing a truly balls out kind of. This is my role. It's got that sort of classic goon. It's Peter Sellers. It's that goon, like, you know, give a script to anyone and they can read The Goon Show. Give it to Peter Sellers and he will knock it out of the park compared even to Spike Milligan and the other goons around him, Harry Secombe. Do you know what I mean? Inspector Clouseau, right? Inspector Clouseau. Yeah. Steve Martin was never going to succeed with that. Now, it's not like you're going to watch Inspector Clouseau or Lemony Snicket and go, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. That's the greatest performance ever. What I'm saying is it's very rare that an actor can level with and then sort of compete with the script, just rise above the script with a level of enjoyment. And it's... I know I've gone on about it, but that's why I loved it so much, is that I just don't see that much anymore. I get the idea that people auditioned, they were given the part, they want to keep the part. This guy, maybe because he was Doogie Howser and he's already made his money, he's got involved with it for the right reasons and he's gone, I'm going to knock it out of the park here, I'm going to enjoy myself, you know.
All right, I'm going to carry on.
Is there some kind of connection between this show and that piece of shit comedy that I hate?
What's that?
Because the one that they're all in, like there's loads of the cast of it in this
show. How I Met Your Mother.
Thank you, that's the one, yeah.
I don't know.
There must be something, because doesn't Kobe Smulders show up in it as well? I thought I saw her on the IMDb page.
Mm-hmm. She's the mother, yeah.
Right, there you go, yeah. So that's four out of them.
She plays
cast.
Mm-hmm.
There must be something to do with it.
There we go. Well, anyway, the reviewers like it. The viewers seem to be rating it top marks. I hope you stick with it. I have got one criticism, and that is that I don't think the baby should be able to eat metal. That's the one.
The baby is horrible.
Yeah.
But stone is fine, right?
It's fine, but it's the one thing in that world that you go, yeah, it's not, you know, everything else is mystical and fantastical, but also possible. That's the bit that is impossible, and that annoys me a little bit. But... Nonetheless.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Nonetheless.
It's funny you should mention about John Hamm as well, because I spent a good 3/4 of this series believing that that was John Hamm.
Oh, damn.
Up until I watched the Black Mirror episode with John Hamm in it, and then I saw the credits for the Black Mirror episode, and I thought, right, so it's not John Hamm. Well, who's it in Lemony Snicket then? So is he the guy who's... Does he voice somebody in Family Guy?
Yeah, he's a voice of certain... He's got a big famous voice, hasn't he? And,
yeah, I recognise him from somewhere. Yeah.
I like him. Yeah. I quite liked him in the first episode.
You know what? I think you're right. I think he does do Family Guy.
Yeah. I think that's what they've done across the board, is get people who are really good.
Yeah, he does the voice of the guy in the wheelchair.
Yeah,
Hank. Oh, yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. All right, no, well...
Joe, that's his name, Joe Swanson.
Well, look forward to the update on how you're getting on, and Matt Wandless will send my blood pressure through the roof on a random Wednesday morning in a couple of weeks, probably. some glib comment. But I urge you to YouTube Plankton SpongeBob SquarePants, and you will see another example of a great performer.
I don't have enough blunts for that.
Oh, it's great. Right, good. Okay, well, carry on with it then, everyone. Yeah, are you going to...
I think I will. Yeah. I'm going to at least watch the end of episode two and try and see this episode three genius that we were talking about.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
I'm going to carry on.
Again, Matt, don't expect genius. Just expect fun.
You've overhyped it.
No, it does get... Episode three, which is as far as I've gotten, it is a lot better than the first two episodes, in my opinion. I just wasn't sure I could...
Yeah. Well, I don't think any character after him is perhaps quite as good as him, but it's an all-stellar cast. And let's just say, in terms of diversity casting, how nice to see loads of main parts in this series who are people of colour. Yeah.
It took me ages to figure out who the lawyer is, the guy who's running their estate. Can you tell me where you know him from?
No.
Gross Point Blank.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, blimey. Wow.
Oh.
Yeah. You know?
Good call, Matt. Good call.
He's also Jack. What else is he in? The OA, is he?
Yeah, he's in the very first episode of The OA. He's
we need to do
a detective in it.
We really need to do the OA. Shall we do it next week?
Definitely. No. It's fascinating and hypnotic.
I need to watch one of these shows to completion now. I'm just watching the first episodes of things.
I was at a meeting yesterday with the commissioning editor of Radio 4 Drama, and he said to the group, the best thing that he's seen in months is The OA on Netflix, so maybe we should have a look at that.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I'm a big fan of it. I've got to go now and have a bath.
Okay, thanks everybody. Right. If you want to email us, studio at theboxsetpod.com, studio at theboxsetpod.com, etc. Good night.
Good night.
I hate you, Matt.
What are you going to do, Krabs? Pour hot oil on me? Or put bamboo shoots under my nails?
There you go.
It's excellent. It's excellent.
If I could meet that guy's voice in real...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Reality must be incredible. Enjoy your crackers.